Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome to Adventure of History.
Wow, we have a special guest. We have a very special guest
we
today.
We do. We have a young person with us. What's your name?
Carly Quila.
Hi, Carly. Thank you for being here with us today. Obviously, school's out. So, and we're talking about Santa and holidays. And what do you love about Santa?
I like the present that he gets.
Yeah.
Does he bring you presents every year?
Uh-huh.
Wow. That's probably because you're a very good girl.
Yes.
And Santa actually came to our neighborhood earlier this month. Do you remember that?
Yes, on the fire truck.
And what was he doing?
Bringing food.
To?
Other person that need it.
Yeah.
Oh, did you give him any food?
Uh-huh. And I handed him that.
Oh, you did. And did he say thank you?
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Okay. And I have to make sure you didn't get any fights recently, did you?
No.
Because you're missing a tooth.
She's missing how many? You're missing like quite a few teeth. Like
does the
four.
Does the tooth fairy come to your house when you lose a tooth?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we didn't say all we want for Christmas is my tooth from the teeth.
No.
Oops. We're making all sorts of noise in here.
We are making all sorts of noises. That's okay, though.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Carly. We're glad you're here tonight. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, how polite. I bet Santa brings lots of things for her every year.
Santa is very generous.
Yes. Okay. So, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yes.
And Happy New Year's coming up. And next time, it'll be next year.
Feels like winter.
It does.
Yes. It's been cold.
So did you have a good Christmas?
Of course, yes. It's always nice and wonderful time to be with the family.
I'm going to forego my usual joke about like some guy broke into my house.
Jeez.
Because it was just Santa that broke into my house.
Yeah.
That joke's getting old. I've been telling it for like 20 years now.
And did he bring you coal and everyone else gifts?
Probably.
Yeah.
So
my dad's been getting coal for quite a long time. It's sort of a running joke.
But see, once upon a time, coal was probably a great gift.
That's true. I haven't looked up the origins of that. Oh, maybe next year.
You know, to throw in your fireplace.
Right. That's true.
You know, I kind of do like the historic thing about like oranges.
Oh.
It seems kind of nice when fruit was not really easy to get, to like get an orange for Christmas.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure kids there are like, what?
I know.
But I kind of like the
Wouldn't
idea
go over so well.
Of a time period where an orange is a pretty good gift.
Yes. Did you know that you're supposed to leave carrots for the reindeer?
Well, of course.
Oh, see, I didn't know that as a kid.
You didn't know that?
I know. Poor reindeer.
What do you think that powered the reindeer?
I don't know. But Carly's good and Kaya, they're, you know, they leave carrots. So
interesting. Yeah. Although I did learn something about carrots, though I have not fact checked it. So my son could just be messing with me. But on the one of the museum properties, and we do take care of six old buildings on four different properties. So I'm not going to say which one, but there's a bunny rabbit now that lives on one of them.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's somebody's pet that got abandoned or if he's just like a wild bunny rabbit that happens to be living on our property.
Well,
he's all black and I call him Mr. Flopsy.
Oh, and you'll find out if you have 50 more.
I made a comment that I'm going to throw carrots to him.
Yeah.
And my son informed me that those were bad for rabbits.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I said, but Bugs Bunny seems really old. He's always eating carrots. And my son just looked at me like I was an idiot.
Yeah. Dad jokes. Dad humor doesn't get so far.
So I've decided I'm going to throw lettuce at him.
There you go. I'm going to try that.
So, but Mr. Flopsy, I see him at least like twice a week.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Again, you might end up with quite a few more.
Maybe. That would be okay. I would be charmed by that.
Cute little bunnies. Yeah.
Little bunny rabbits. Okay. All right. So shall we get to the big history highlights?
Yes.
So these are things that happen tomorrow.
Yes.
December 27th. I don't have a ton of stuff. I think everybody's like taking a holiday break or something.
Yeah, that's good.
So 1831, Charles Darwin set sail from England on board the HMS Beagle.
I saw that one, yep.
And of course, he's going to end up in the Galapagos Islands.
Kind of a big deal.
Which I love saying that word. Galapagos is just fun to say.
Yeah. Yeah,
and of course, then he's going to write about the origin of species.
Because there's nothing else to do there.
That's right. Well, I would imagine.
It's small, but it's gorgeous, I'm sure. And there are lots of species there.
I would think it would be kind of fun to sit there and watch. The only person I actually know firsthand, Arlene Lemire, visited there a couple years ago.
Okay.
And she gave us a nice report.
Yeah, my grandpa went too.
1900, prohibitionist Carrie Nation smashes up the bar at the Carrie Hotel in Wichita, Kansas.
Oh.
She didn't like alcohol.
I guess not.
1932, Radio City Music Hall opens.
I saw that one too.
Yeah. I think we've established you've never been there, but nope. I have. Nope. Okay. 1947, the first Howdy Doody show.
Oh, how fun.
A puppet playhouse telecast on NBC. Howdy Doody.
Yeah.
Well, howdy, Mr. Doody. I never actually watched the show.
No.
It's before my time.
I was going to say, I didn't think that you were that old.
All the white in my beard. You never know now. 1968, because everyone knows I love the space stuff. Apollo 8 returns to Earth after its successful mission to the moon.
Oh, okay.
1979, Soviets take over Afghanistan. I wonder how that worked out.
Right.
And then our history highlight today. And I was kind of torn because I thought, well, maybe the Charles Darwin thing.
Yep.
And then I could have gone with Apollo 8, except for it's the return.
Oh.
We've already landed on the moon at this point, so.
It is a good thing they came back, though.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we proved that we can send them and bring them back, which is an important part of the equation. But our history highlight of the day, 1904, the stage play Peter Pan premieres at the Duke of York Theater in London. Mm. Peter Pan. How many whimsical minds of children has that inspired?
Yes. And similarly told stories, too, right? I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And how many people we said, oh, he's got a Peter Pan syndrome? What would we say? Oh, he's immature.
Yep. that would not be nearly as nice.
But now we know to say he's got a Peter Pan syndrome.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So that was the best I could pick.
Yes. Especially after Christmas. That's a good one.
Did I miss anything?
No, that was good. I think you had it all.
So trying to decide what the show should be, because last year we did a thing about how to celebrate New Year's Eve.
Which was good.
Well, might have been our best show ever.
Until tonight.
And we've done Christmas stuff before, so I wasn't really quite sure what we should do. Had I known you were going to bring a guest, we could have just talked to her the entire show.
Yes.
And she's heading over to the mic again. See, I think it runs in the family. I think
she'll get used to it.
Broadcaster in the future, maybe. But I went to our internet archive that loyal listeners, you've heard me talk about this many, many times. And you can just go onto our website, astoriamuseums.org, and then we've got a thing you can link to called the Internet Archive, where we've been digitizing for about a year and a half, 2 years now, just everything in our collection. We're nowhere near. I mean, tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
But I did that. Not only do we have our metadata, but you can word search stuff.
So nice, yeah.
So I just typed in Christmas.
There we go.
And we got some really interesting hits.
Good.
So this first one, I'm going to let you do this one. Childhood memories from a lady named Pauline Hall Morgan.
We were a poor family and had few gifts at Christmas, but we had many duck stews with dumplings to eat. We attended the Christmas program at the New Presbyterian Church on Grand Avenue. The tree there was very tall and beautifully decorated. Carols were played on the pipe organ, the only one in the county. Each child received a red gauze stocking decorated with green yarn filled with an orange in the toe and nuts and candy. We looked forward to those treats. When we were older, grandmother's sister, Sarah Clinton, invited us and all the neighborhood children to see her Christmas tree at 10 o'clock on Christmas morning. We were asked to enter the big kitchen where we left our shoes and coats on the coat rack. We liked this because she had a parrot who greeted us with,
"Hello, hello."
We liked to stay a bit and see if he would talk some more. No. We were eager to go as Aunt Sarah had a lovely large home, a parlor with a grand piano, a sitting room, a large circular ball, and a large kitchen, all comfortably warm. The Christmas tree was in a small room adjoining the other rooms. The candles were made of red wax, burning down slowly. As there was always the danger of fire, someone was always watching. Aunt Sarah gave us such lovely gifts. The girls each received a sterling silver thimble. We were supposed to know how to sew, or at least do cross-stitch. Another time, we received a Madeira embroidered lace collar, the style at the time. Attached to it was a locket with filigreed sides. Grocery stores gave such lovely calendars free to their customers. We would try to get one covered with glitter with snow scenes. They also had barrels of mistletoe to give away. The season was always a happy time.
See, and this was just among like a whole bunch of other things, and I just pulled out the Christmas stuff from it.
That's nice.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
And what great, like very apropos, very, very descriptive memories.
Happy.
I enjoyed that. So something similar to this, we have the diary of a lady named Mary Riddle of Svensson. And This one kind of goes on for a while. Okay. So maybe we just like go back and forth. But January 2nd, 1904. So 1904 in Svensson. Now I have been gone for 10 days over to Jake Solds. I spent Christmas and New Year's there. I helped Nin do her butchering work. They killed 5 hogs on Monday after Christmas. We made sausage and head cheese, fried out the lard, cleaned the heads and feet, and got all done the day before New Year's. Yeah. How'd you spend your Christmas break?
Yeah, that was today in 1904. the Monday after Christmas, at least. December 15th, 1904. Now I've been over to Solds since Saturday, helping Maggie Sold do all their butchering work. We made lots of sausage and head cheese.
It's like a year later, she's doing the same thing.
Lots and lots.
December 27th, 1904. I was down to Coe's today, saw Bertie's husband for the first time, Bertie Coe McIntyre. Mr. Coe is feeling very bad. Mrs. Coe had all the children come home to Christmas dinner, for he will never see another Christmas come around. Hmm. How sad.
January 1st, 1905. May the good Lord help me to spend the coming year in usefulness if I should live it through. I have been reading this evening in the first diary book I ever wrote. I have read year after year so many things I had forgotten. Now, after all these years, I sit here alone. My life is not very interesting to me. I'm just living from day to day. No object in view but to pass the time away by doing whatever come up to do. I hope to find lots of good yet to do and be able to do it. If not, then God's will be done.
I find that incredibly sad and incredibly uplifting.
Yeah.
At the same time.
January 1st, right?
Yeah. Taking stock. I've read through everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I live through the next year, I hope to be useful. Yes. Because I kind of love that whole notion of being useful.
Yes, that's a good one.
December 28th, 1908. So obviously she did live
beyond
1905. December 28th, 1908. I hear Mrs. Hunt has a new girl baby. I made a doll today. I'm going to make a shirt, pants, and coat to put on it. Little Newton Ward felt bad at the Christmas tree that he had not got a boy doll. Now he shall have one as soon as I get it dressed. I made a nice doll and took it over to Mrs. Humosky's girl yesterday. Oh.
January 1, 1909. Now we're in the new year. I heard the midnight cannon boom at the fort last night and set my clock by it. I was 10 minutes slow, and I want to keep up with the times. She's getting a little more frisky in her older age there.
So she obviously lives through 1909, because December 29th, 1909, I had company all afternoon. Mrs. Erickson, Mrs. Whedon, and Mrs. Svensson spent the afternoon. Mrs. Svensson gave me a beautiful plate for a Christmas present. I have got a lot of presents, more than I deserve, for I have given none this Christmas but cards. I have sent off about 3 dozen pretty postal cards.
December 31st, 1909, now it will soon be midnight and the new year will begin. December 31st, 1910. Now 1910 is past for us. Be it good or bad, I am sitting up to see the old year out and hear the bells ring in Astoria. There is dread of a great sorrow hanging over us now, and that is the uncertain sickness of our dear Margaret. We can only hope for the best. I spent the first part of the evening looking over postal cards. I have 24 Christmas cards and today got 3 New Year's cards. Goodbye, 1910.
Isn't that kind of fun?
That's nice. Yes.
So, a good reason to keep diaries.
Yes.
Because 100 years, some talented person and idiot might read them on the air.
Yes.
And just the other, I mean, what good information. We've got names, and we know that they got oranges and nuts, and we know that the one lady had a parrot.
There we go.
So these are just some newspaper accounts that tied in with Christmas and New Year's that we thought we'd share.
Okay.
December 19th, 1931, members of the Astoria Garden Club are again sponsoring the outdoor Christmas illumination for homes and businesses, business establishments of the city for the 3rd consecutive year. And the club is expecting a larger participation than ever this year. With more homes participating in at least a simple manner, it was announced today. That's quite the announcement. The contest allows for several sections, including house and grounds, outdoor Christmas tree, window decoration, and door decoration, with judging being based on lighting effect and Christmas spirit expressed. And officers of the club are urging that townspeople take this means of beautifying the city during the Christmas season.
I love that. That sounds like fun. December 22nd, 1906, a large number of Christmas shoppers came to the city today from all directions. The Astoria and Columbia Railway train brought an extra large number this morning, and from the country districts south of the city, numerous wagons drove in, returning in the afternoon. A large number of people also arrived in the city today from the north side of the river. Well, it's last-minute shopping. That's 22nd.
Exactly. That is what it is.
It was all men.
I had to laugh. I went to the post office just because we have a P.O. box for the museum. And I was there like on Christmas Eve, and there's people with packages. I'm like, oh, really?
Wow.
Yes. Just because it's postmarked doesn't.
It's not going to make it, folks.
It doesn't matter. I mean, you don't get credit just because it's postmarked. It's not like your taxes or something.
Right.
All right. December 24th, 1932. More than 1,100 children of Astoria and the surrounding territory attended the annual Elks Christmas Tree Party at the Liberty Theater this morning. Braving the rain, the children walked happily into the theater to see the Christmas tree, a motion picture program, Santa Claus himself, and receive gifts as they marched out. Featured on the picture program was Mickey Mouse and a number of other short subjects.
How fun.
1,100 people.
That's a lot. That's 1,100 children.
Children. Yeah, oh my gosh. And then all the parents. What a nightmare. Way to go, Liberty Theater.
Yes. December 25th, 1861. P.W. Gillette writes in his journal, "This looks something like an old-fashioned Christmas. The ground is 4 inches deep in snow, which has been falling over since Sunday last. News has reached us of the burning of Charleston, South Carolina, and the bombardment of New Orleans."
Ooh, Civil War stuff.
Yeah.
December 25th, 1935. Jail's prisoners will get turkey. 7 prisoners confined in the county jail will have a turkey dinner and fixings today, according to a report issued by the sheriff's office. There's only one prisoner in the city jail, a man who drank too much Christmas cheer Tuesday evening. But if able to eat, he will also have turkey and trimmings.
Good for him.
And of course, that's the Oregon Film Museum.
Oh, right. How fun.
I wonder if they like the Goonies.
December 26th, Nellie Flavel writes in her diary, "Christmas is over and we are tired, for we were at the tire efforts on Christmas Eve and stayed till 1 o'clock. And the next night we had a grand ball here and did not go to bed till 4 in the morning. So are tired out. We had a fine time, though. I've just written a letter to Mama, which I hope will go in time. The weather is frightfully dark, and all day Christmas it was dark and gloomy, but we had a good time, even if the weather was bad."
And I don't know, we didn't write down what year that is, so I don't know if she's in San Francisco or here. Yeah, I failed you. December 26, 1947, lighthouse men eat beef instead of Christmas turkey. 3 lighthouse men on the 130-foot-high Tillamook Rock celebrated Christmas without turkey. Their turkey was to arrive 2 days before Christmas on the cutter Balsam, but seas were too rough for the vessel to approach the rock. They ate roast beef instead.
Not bad.
I wouldn't mind eating roast beef on Tillamook Rock.
There you go. A lot of people do prime rib. December 25th, 1935, children warned against shooting Christmas rifles. Chief John Acton has issued a warning to youngsters who received air rifles and .22 caliber rifles for Christmas and who have been firing them in the city limits that such action is forbidden by law and those so engaged will be prosecuted. Complaints have been received from residents of the Irving Avenue district that bullets have been coming out of the woods above and that street and falling in the residential section. I agree. Yes. Don't do it now either.
Yes. That just seems like, really, this is news?
Yeah.
But how many bullets are whipping around out there? December 28th, 1931, outdoor Christmas illuminations at the home of Mrs. C.E. Foster on Irving Avenue, that would have been Michael Foster's parents, were awarded first prize in the house division of the Astoria Garden Club Illumination Contest.
How fun.
In the window division, Mrs. Harry Flavel took first place.
Oh, nice. New Year's Eve, December, let's see.
These are New Year's Eve related.
Related. Okay. December 21st, 1895. The Astoria Amateur Brass Band will give a dance New Year's Eve at Fisher's Hall. Admission,
$1. 1895, a dollar. That's like a day's pay.
That's a lot. They wanted to keep it small. December 31st, 1885. Nellie Flavel writes in her diary, "This is the last day of 1885, and I am now finishing this book, which was commenced in San Francisco. I wonder where I will be in a year at this time. The weather is quite cold and there is little snow on the ground and it is freezing tonight. My head aches tonight, but I hope to feel well tomorrow to commence the new year well. Goodbye to 1885.
Goodbye, 1885. January 1st, 1925. Orderly celebration is staged in Astoria. Joyous but orderly crowds greeted the debut of 1925 this morning, according to Chief of Police C.A. Murphy. The height of hilarity. I love that phrase. The height of hilarity prevailed at New Year's celebrations staged in Liberty Theater, at dance halls, in restaurants, and at private parties. But there was little, very little disorder. No drunks were arrested during the night. Several tipsy persons were told to go home by police officers, and those persons all took the hints and left the centers of festivities. Racket-making devices of all sorts were employed as the mystic hour of midnight arrived. Confetti was liberally scattered all over every place.
Sounds fun. January 1st, 1936, Astorians in gay, orderly celebrations. Astorians enjoyed a gay but orderly celebration of the advent of the new year last night. Hundreds of private parties were supplemented by public and semi-public affairs. Dances in Astoria and in the country districts were reported to have been well patronized, and big throngs enjoyed the midnight matinee programs at local theaters. Cafes and restaurants did a rushing business in the early hours of the morning. The crowds, while gay and noisy for a time, were well behaved according to police reports, and not a single arrest for drunkenness was found necessary.
Wow, way to go. Well, that wasn't true. That was 1936. It wasn't true in 1925. The January 2nd, 1925, first man arrested, Olaf Peterson. Of course it was Olaf. 31, age 31, was the first man in Astoria in 1925 to feel the hand of a police officer upon his shoulder. That is, providing Peterson was feeling anything at the time. Bubbling over with buxom glee, buoyed up with a superabundance of self-confidence, and weaving dizzily about the streets as a result of a hand-to-mouth tussle with a bottle of doubtful liquor, Peterson was arrested at 9th and Bond Streets about 5:50 p.m. yesterday. 5:50 p.m. on January 1st. He's still feeling it.
Had a good time. We also had, we're going to talk a little White Christmas, one of the most popular, if not the most popular Christmas movie. This is from a Good Housekeeping article in 2019 by Asher Fogel. And it was a kind of a list of the things you don't know about White Christmas.
Fun facts about White Christmas.
The fun, or the first thing is,
are they little known facts? Fun facts or little known facts?
Both.
Okay. Little known
sort of
facts.
Subjective. This wasn't the first time Bing Crosby sang White Christmas on screen. Many folks assumed that the track White Christmas originally came from the movie, but in reality, he first performed the tune 13 years before the movie came out on the radio show The Kraft Music Hall. He then sang it in Irving Berlin's 1942 classic Holiday Inn, as well as Blue Skies in 1946. Still, most will agree that White Christmas version is the best.
You know, I honestly wouldn't know the difference between the versions.
Yeah, I don't think I would.
I would need to hear them all back to back to back to back. Irving Berlin opened his own Oscar for White Christmas. That doesn't seem quite right. The composer is the only Oscar presenter to ever open an envelope and read his own name as the winner. After winning for his Holiday Inn rendition of White Christmas, he joked with the audience, "I'm glad to present the award. I've known him for a long time."
That is a good one. Another one is Sisters. That song, Sisters, wasn't part of the script. Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye's comedy act wasn't originally in the story. They were goofing around, though, and director Michael Curtis found it so hilarious that he wrote it in. Apparently, the actors found it comical, too. The laughing during the number is real. The take in the film was the best one they could get out of the two when they kept cracking each other up. It is one of the best parts of the movie.
That's funny. The Vermont Inn doubled as Holiday Inn, too. Mm-hmm. General Waverly's Columbia Inn in fictional Pine Tree, Vermont, made its debut a decade before in Holiday Inn. The set on the Paramount lot was refurbished for the next Christmas classic.
That's good. Vera Ellen didn't actually sing any of the songs. Now, when the character Judy Haynes sings, you're actually hearing her on-screen sister, Rosemary Clooney, or singer Trudy Stevens. The only time Vera's real singing voice is heard is when they disembark the train in Vermont and the quartet sing the opening lines of Snow. But
I got to watch this again because I can't remember.
It's not coming to you.
Yeah, the scenes, I can't like.
She did do all of her own dancing. So Vera Ellen started dancing at age 10. At age 18, she became one of the youngest Radio City Rockettes, performing in several Broadway shows before heading to Hollywood. Fun tidbit, growing up in Norwood, Ohio, a suburb of Cincinnati, she carpooled to dancing classes with Doris Day. But Doris Day could sing. Maybe Doris Day could have sung.
Doris Day could do everything.
Yeah.
All right, let's see.
Fred Astaire, that's a good one.
Should we do Fred Astaire was supposed to play Phil Davis? I can't picture that. After Fred and Bing's success in Holiday Inn, this film was intended to reunite them. But Fred had retired by the time White Christmas was shot 12 years later, and he declined. Did he feel old or something? Come on. I mean, he was dancing for
wasn't enough money.
Yeah. Then the part was offered to Donald O'Connor, known for Singing in the Rain. But he pulled out after an illness. Then the part was reworked for Danny Kaye,
who seems perfect for it, but yeah, in hindsight.
It's just one of those things, if you had not seen it with him in it first, right, you'd be like, what?
And he's so goofy. It wasn't originally about the snow. What would they have named it then? In the club car of the train, the four leads sing Snow about their frosty dreams. Originally, the Irving Berlin tune was called Free, but the musical but the musical Call Me Madam, and it had nothing to do with winter. So. Hmm.
The TV camera in the Ed Harrison show scene is a real one. Rumor has it, anyway. As stated on IMDb, the camera belonged to NBC's Channel 4 station in New York. They were there.
Nice. Bing Crosby made up most of the liverwurst sandwiches and buttermilk. The iconic scene when he tells Bob tells Betty his theory about what foods cause good dreams was mostly completely improvised, according to Rosemary Clooney. Then he launched into Count Your Blessings, and we stopped caring about the buttermilk with liverwurst sandwiches, which do, I agree with the writer here, sound absolutely vile. In fact, much of his dialogue was based on Bing's own conversation, so you can thank him for gems like that.
Hmm. Bob Fosse was the uncredited choreographer.
Nice.
Yes, long before his sizzling moves appeared in films like Cabaret, Chicago, and All That Jazz. Wow, those are all winners. A young Bob sent Vera Ellen spinning and tapping across the stage.
There's a big flub during one of the most iconic scenes. Danny Kaye, a decent dancer but nowhere near Vera Ellen's skill, accidentally trips here near the end of The Best Things Happen While You're Dancing. That's when they're dancing on a boat. Tap dancing. When Vera twirls behind a kneeling Danny, she catches her foot on his, but graceful and imperceptibly recovers. That's good. Wow.
So the costumes were created by an icon, designer Edith Head. Was already an Oscar winner by the time she worked on White Christmas. Throughout her life, she won 8 Academy Awards for costume design, more than any other individual in that category, for classics like The Sting, Sabrina, and Roman Holiday.
Nice. They reshot the ending without film. After the final shot wrapped, the actors were told that they needed to redo the finale. Rosemary Clooney recalled in the DVD extras, "The King and Queen of Greece were visiting the set, and the producer hoped to give them something to remember, so the entire scene was reshot, but without film in the camera or Bing Crosby, who had already left to play golf."
Weird. Berlin changed lyrics for Bing. The song "Gee, I Wish I Was Back in the Army" has a lyric about seeing Jolson Hope and Benny all for free, a reference to wartime entertainers Al Jolson, Bob Hope, and Jack Benny. The original words were Crosby, Hope, and Jolson all for free. But when Bing Crosby was cast, leaving it as is would break the fourth wall.
Mm. There's no official soundtrack. The soundtrack rights for the film were controlled by Decca, but Rosemary Clooney was under exclusive contract to Columbia, a competing record label. So in 1954, Decca recorded and released an album with the movie cast minus Rosemary. Her part was sung by Peggy Lee, and Columbia released an album with Rosemary singing 8 songs from the film, which means the only way to hear her sing with Bing is on screen.
Wow. Well, those are really fun.
Yeah.
So since this is our last show of the year.
It is.
I just wanted to say a huge thank you to everybody for listening and all the people that make me so much better than I really am. my family, my incredible staff, my incredible volunteers, which the Historical Society just would not survive without. My wonderful board of directors that allow us to do amazing things. And my fabulous co-host for now 3 years.
I love it.
That makes this show so much better.
Thank you.
And thank you to all of our local listeners. And
we'll talk to you again soon. Happy New Year, everyone.
You've got a little bit of time if you want to say anything.
Oh, well, I too am very appreciative, yes, of my family and, of course, all of our friends. These past couple of years have been hard and trying, and so it definitely helps us. These holidays help us remember what is most important to us, and that certainly is our friends and family and those who we love. And I do. I love being here on the radio, too. Thank you for listening to us, being part of our life.
And we're happy to be done with 2021. We're very excited for 2022. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. We will catch you next year.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.